Welcome to our annual results presentation. I'll get into it straight away. We still got a few guys going, "Louis, why are you late?" Huh? You still own shares? Okay, I think if we look at the year we've just been through, we would regard it as an improving operating environment, particularly as you're seeing a lot of strength in the U.K. economy and an improved situation in the developed world. Clearly, on the South African side of life has been a lot tougher, generally speaking, and that's clearly reflected in the currency. The pound sterling was particularly strong against all other operating currencies, and that would have had a big impact on these results because our reporting currency is sterling. We have seen good equity markets, and we have continued to see very benign interest rates. So overall, we would have considered to be an improving operating environment. I think clearly we do believe we have a diverse business model with decent revenue diversity. We've seen a good mix of income coming from our non-banking activities, and that generated about 46% of operating profit between the two of them, which is our wealth and investment business and our asset management business against our specialist banking business at 54% or 53.5%. If you took us back pre-financial crisis, it was 80-20. So we have done a lot to change our business model over the last while. On the geographic mix, still South Africa makes the largest contribution. UK did show quite a lot of improved results. However, we did go through the significant restructure in Australia. So in neutral currency, you did see continued growth in our key earnings drivers. Obviously, in pounds, some of these were affected by the exchange rate. So our third-party assets under management did increase by 8.9%. However, they were down 0.7% in pounds. Our customer accounts, which is deposits, increased by 6.2%, and our loans and advances by 7.9%. Both those numbers were down approximately 7% in sterling. If you look at operating income, in neutral currency, it was up 5.6%. In sterling, it was down 2.9%. So again, but that's neutral currency is really home currency. So we did manage to grow the top line. Obviously, improved economic conditions and the fact that we were well provisioned in prior years have seen a significant drop-off in impairments. South African impairments are down in rands just under 24%. UK impairments on our core book were down 17%, and if we include Kensington in the number, down 39%. So you are seeing the impairment line normalise. Already at September, we told you we had some extra impairments in Australia, and that was fairly moderate for the second half of the year. Most of this was reflected in the first half of the year. So overall, impairments were down significantly. Our fixed costs were marginally up. Our cost-to-income ratio did weaken, and that's partly a consequence of the exchange rate as the mix of income goes more to the developed world. Our South African cost-to-income ratio actually improved to about 52%, so almost in line with where we want to be. Still work to do on the UK specialist bank. If you look at Investec Asset Management, the operating margins remain steady at 34.7%, which is around about where we expect them for that business. We saw a big improvement in operating margins in our wealth business, down to from 20.3% to 22.9%. Still not normal yet, but on the way there. And then the specialist bank had a deterioration in operating margins, and part of that was obviously the issues in Australia. South Africa did see an improvement, as I said earlier, in the specialist bank's operating margin, and the UK, we still have work to do to reshape, but we are well on the way on that, as we'll talk about later. So when you look at overall results in sterling, and I'll also give you the rand results, you can see that they were up 20% in neutral currency, approximately 6% across in pounds. Dividend up 5.6% in pounds, up 27% in rand. So some of you guys sitting here in South Africa shouldn't really complain. And net asset value per share up 9% in neutral currency, 2.2% in down 2.2% in sterling. So if you look at the rand performance, operating profit before tax up 28%, earnings per share up 24.7%, dividend per share up 27%, net asset value per share up 23%. And you can see that if you look at the graph at the bottom, there has been a fairly strong recovery from our results post the crisis. So we're almost getting back to normal. We did make some progress on our financial targets. We're still way off on return on equity where we need to be. So we went up to 10.1%. Our EPS growth, our target is 10% above the UK retail price index. Clearly, we were below that at 5.3, but if we look at it in neutral currency, we're up 19.7%. And our cost-to-income ratio is outside the target, and we'll deal with that in a bit later on. And our dividend cover was within target. If we look at our capital, we've got a very stable capital position. Post the Australian transaction, you'll see the UK core ratio move to within our, above our target level. I think that if you look, you always got to look at common equity against leverage. We're a lowly leveraged organization with our leverage ratio in the 7% mark against the minimum requirement at 3%. I think you would have noticed a lot of global banks had to do capital raisings to improve their leverage ratios. And as I said, our common equity ratio, we're on a standardized approach, so we're targeting 10% by March 2016 based on a fully loaded Basel 3 or CRD4, which they call it in the UK, regulation. So, as I said, post the Australian transaction, the UK, the Investec PLC will be in line, and we're comfortable the South African business will get there by 2016. We also are moving the South African business in time from standardized to advanced, which will also add a percent to our core ratio. Looking at our individual businesses, I think you're all aware that we did complete sale of a percentage of the asset management business to management in July. I think overall we did benefit from higher average funds under management with net inflows of about £2.6 billion. Our investment performance is very strong in the long term, a bit weak in the short term, but still very competitive. And our funds under management in sterling did decline from £69.8 billion to £68 billion. However, if you look at it in rand, it went from 1.7 odd to about just under 2 trillion rand. So, you know, this business is well positioned, has good momentum. It did have some headwinds during the course of last year with the minute the Fed started tapering talk. You clearly had money flow away from emerging markets and or money that was meant to go, was earmarked for emerging markets not going in. And we do manage a lot of money in emerging markets. However, that seems to have subsided and we're starting to see good momentum again. So we believe that that momentum is positive, that our priorities are to deepen and widen our investment strategies and to focus on further diversifying our client base. And we're also expanding a range of private market strategies and trying to increase penetration in Asia, Europe, and the Americas. We have more recently opened up a Singapore office, and we'll also start manufacturing some product in Singapore. At the moment, we manufacture primarily in Cape Town and London. So I think if you look at the key drivers, as I mentioned, the operating margin was stable. The net inflows were lower than the last 2 years, but that was also partly to do with what was happening in emerging markets. And our average income as a percentage of funds under management came down marginally, but still, you know, at the 0.6 type level. I think our wealth and investment business really had a very strong performance. I think this is the benefit of integration of the acquisitions, good markets, and a very strong positioning and performance across the spectrum. We benefited from higher average funds under management. We did see net inflows and an improvement in operating margins, as I mentioned, and overall up 30.5% operating profit. I think the UK business has expanded across the geography in the UK. It has been investing in infrastructure. It has been investing in talent. And you know, it is getting into a pretty good space. I think our South African business has benefited from a strong alignment with the private bank in terms of marketing to our private client base and a lot of progress in working together with the international counterparties, counterparts on leveraging our global investment platform. So I think we have made a lot of investment in this business, and we continue to make a lot of investment. We're building our online and digital capability to make it easier for clients to transact with us, those that wish to use that sort of channel. And we hopefully that we, through those initiatives, will improve our efficiencies, our infrastructure costs, and also improve revenue at the same time. So very strong performance from this business. I think if you look at the operating margin, I mentioned it did improve to 22.5%. We did see good net inflows, and our average income as a percentage of funds under management did also improve as we get the benefits of the integration of the businesses in the UK. On the specialist banking side, we had very strong performance from South Africa. It grew 29%. I think we benefited from an increase in corporate activity, corporate fees, a good increase in income from customer flow. Our unlisted private equity business performed well. We've seen very good growth in attraction of clients in the private banking business, our investment in property trading portfolios, although last year they had a phenomenal year, this year they had a reasonable year, so they delivered a sound performance. I think the specialist bank in South Africa is doing particularly well. There's still a little bit of legacy, but that is starting to run off completely. And if we'd eliminate the legacy, we would have done even better than this. The UK grew 30%. I think we had strong performance from our principal investment activity. We had good growth in our professional and asset finance loan portfolios. We're seeing a big improvement in the quality of income. But it is clearly a place where we still have a lot of work to do. And that's part of the reshaping that has been going on over the past while. Australia reported a loss, as you would be aware. I think we come to the end of the reshaping of Australia. Our people there have done an excellent job in terms of navigating the business to where we want it to be. Our sale with the Bank of Queensland is only subject to regulatory approval now. And so they've raised all the money they wanted to raise. They got good support from the market for the transaction. I think the fact that we were able to sell at a $200 million premium to book, which is almost twice book, reflects the fact that there was a proper business there that had a proper traction, had a proper client base. However, someone else could make a lot more money from it than we could because of the scale issues that we were facing in that market. So I think we have reshaped this business almost completely. We believe that we're very well positioned to benefit from any improvement in economic conditions going forward. It has been a very, very tough period, particularly in places like the UK, for this business. But if you look at the UK economic stats, you can see that they're moving into a totally different plane. And we're really hopeful that as life continues to improve, so we'll get a lot more traction. We have clearly articulated what the legacy book is, and I'll talk in a moment about where we are with that legacy book and the progress that we're making. And our ongoing businesses are starting to perform well. So if you look at the mix of income, net interest income would have been up a margin in stable currency. We did grow our loan portfolios on average by about 6 or 7% in stable currency. In pound sterling, they were down. Our fees and commissions, again, were up a little bit in stable currency. So, and our investment and trading income was up in both stable and neutral currency. Actual sterling. So, still, you know, as I said, work to do. Costs were up. marginally in neutral currency, down in pounds, and as I said to you, impairments were down significantly in this period. The areas that we have work to do on is in the cost-to-income ratio and ROE. ROE is still nowhere near where it needs to be, and that's partially a consequence of very low interest rates, that your reinvestment rate on your cash is almost zero in the developed world, and partially a consequence of the reshaping. Once we complete the reshaping, get rid of the legacy, the ROE starts to normalize. We have managed to grow our core loans. You can see over period the growth in risk-weighted assets are not quite linked to growth in core loans. That's the change in regulation that has come at us over the period, and our credit loss ratio is starting to normalize. It's still not quite normal, but it's down from, I think, a peak of 1.28%, 2.68%, and I guess that normal for us would be probably closer to 0.5. I think if you look at the legacy, there are two elements to it. There's legacy in the bank and legacy in Kensington. I think in the bank you can see that it has come down from £2.6 billion at the end of March last year to just under £2.2 billion. Of that legacy, the bulk of it is performing. There's £387 million that is not performing, that is in workout mode. The balance is performing, and I'll give you an idea of the expected runoff in a moment. On Kensington, we've got £1.2 billion of Kensington warehouse lines left. The rest is in the securitized pool. We have told you that we're in the process of trying to sell Kensington, and we're making quite good progress. We've had a lot of interest, and we'll be able to say something probably within the next 6 weeks, depending. So in these results, our legacy would have cost us £83 million after tax, a bit more than we would have expected when we sat here and originally articulated the legacy. We are trying to accelerate the clearance of it, so we will make some calls on clearing stuff, and sometimes when you make those calls, you do accelerate a loss that you were anticipating to make. However, I think we are making good progress. As economies improve, it gets easier and easier, but it's still something that we have to navigate out of our system over the next while. So if you look at the ongoing business, it's getting a very good ROE. Cost-to-income ratio is still a little bit high at 70. We do load the specialist bank with all the head office costs and all the marketing costs. So that's probably not a very fair reflection, but it's still where we are. They also get the benefit of the capital, but you're earning nothing on the capital. So, if you look at the legacy, this is our expected runoff. So it will take us another, 4 years to clear it. Clearly, if we sell Kensington, then this runoff will be, it won't exist next year. So that obviously is what we're trying to do, is accelerate the clearance of the legacy so you can see us in a normalized way. I think if we look at our strategic priorities from a year ago, we said that there was a number of things that we were going to do as a firm. I'm going to concentrate on the one that says simplify the specialist banking business model. It had become very complex, and we were trying to do too many things pre the crisis. Obviously, we had to navigate the crisis, and now we see clarity. We have to move forward. So we believe that what we said we'd do, we have made good progress in doing. We've done a lot to simplify and declutter. So if you look at what we've done in the UK, we sold our trust business. We sold Lease Direct Finance. We've integrated the investment bank and the securities business into our corporate. We position ourselves as a mid-corporate specialist. So we've integrated that, so we're offering a lot more to a corporate as opposed to just advice. We're offering treasury services, we're offering debt advice, we're offering all sorts of other things into that corporate market, including M&A, including broking. And there we've commenced the process of the sale of the Kensington business. I think the second thing, obviously, is Australia. We have sold the professional finance, asset finance and leasing business. It's subject to regulatory approval, but that means we've sold the bank in Australia. That means we can run Australia as a non-bank financial services company. We can't take any deposits in that environment. We're no longer supervised by APRA. We're supervised by ASIC, which is a different sort of level of supervision. And it eliminates a whole layer of cost and infrastructure. And we can still originate debt, as we will continue to do in the corporate space. We have some fund management activities. Principally, we have a property fund that's listed in Johannesburg. We have an aircraft fund that's a private fund, both in Australia and in Hong Kong, that is partially supported by our team on the ground in Australia. And we also have an asset management capability, mainly a sales team. We don't manage any money there for Investec Asset Management. So we go down from, 500 people to about 90-odd, and much leaner, much fitter, hopefully, and with much less infrastructure going forward. I think the other thing that we're trying to do in the UK going forward is trying to drive our private banking capability. We've developed a transactional capability. We launched our products in February this year, focusing on professionals in the UK and our South African client base that wish to open up accounts in the UK. We did launch our Voyage account sometime last year to more high net worth individuals and high net income individuals. We continue to try and grow our specialized lending to high net worth clients. We do still have a niche property business, a lot more focused than it used to be. And then we have leveraging the link between the wealth business, which has a lot more clients than the private bank at this point in time. It's the opposite of South Africa. South Africa have a lot of clients in the private bank, less in the wealth business. In the UK, we've got a lot of clients in the wealth business, less in the private bank, but we're trying to offer both products and services to that client base. I think if we look at what we're doing in the corporate space, we've got a very strong small ticket asset finance business grown from £20 million book to £660 million over the last 8 years. We've got a strong treasury and products business which deals with the mid-corporate space from nothing to 1,360 clients. And £10.6 billion of volume. We have the aviation finance business that we've now got a number of funds that we've created, both debt funds and equity funds, with third-party money that is linked into that business. We have very strong capability there, and we have very strong infrastructure finance business. These are in addition to our normal day-to-day activities. On the specialist bank side in South Africa, I think we are focusing on offering our clients a much more integrated service. I think we have a good franchise here. We're getting a lot of collaboration between the private bank and the wealth business, and we're seeing the benefits of that in terms of flows into the wealth business. We're also looking at the corporates from a holistic perspective as opposed to a product perspective and trying to offer them a much broader service, and we have a very good offering into the South African corporate market. We've progressed the rollout of an African strategy. We're not going to be retail in Africa. We're not going to open up banks in Africa, but we will open up offices. Our product offering is really asset management, corporate banking, and wealth management to the higher-end individuals in that market. So we believe that the performance of the specialist bank will be driven by two factors. One is managing down the legacy portfolios and, importantly, growing the business organically with efficiency and balance sheet optimization. So we really believe that we are back in terms of growing this business organically. And it's something we've tried to do since the crisis, to make sure that we're building good underlying businesses while we deal with all the clutter that was created from whatever happened. I think in asset management, we built this business mostly organically. We haven't made acquisitions in this business, since we bought Guinness Flight in 1998. And that's the whole strategy, is continue to drive it organically. The business is always affected by cycles and price movements in the short term, but we are investing in building for the next phase of growth in line with a clear long-term strategy. We're a very stable and experienced management team, and they're focusing on investment performance and growing the client base. And as we said before, we manufacture it in Cape Town and London, but we distribute all the way, all around the world, in all geographies. And then for our wealth business, I think the important thing is to continue to build critical mass in our future growth areas. We are a client-driven business. We're not a product pusher, so we try and service our clients by managing their portfolios according to their needs. We have developed our offshore offering now, and we're building our private office service to high net worth type clients. We continue to leverage off the group's private client platform around the world and also the group's global investment platform. So again, you know, we are driving this business organically. We also making sure that we have an integrated solution to our private clients. Whether you're a client on the wealth side or the private bank, there's an integrated offering, one gateway into Investec, in time able to deal across geography or within geography, across banking and wealth management products. And these are things that we have been busy on, a lot of effort going into it, and we have made significant progress on this front in the past year through the building of a very sound digital platform. So I think in closing, you can see we have a very balanced business model, 52% now coming from capital light. If I went back to 2008, it was 40-60, now it's 52-48. Clearly, you know, as interest rates start rising and you start seeing improvement in general economic conditions, you might see also some upliftment in capital-intensive type revenue streams. But certainly we've got the business into a nice degree of balance. 70% of our income is annuity. We are very, as I said to you earlier, very client-focused. We're building a client franchise businesses, you know, alongside the client franchise businesses, which are private banking, our corporate banking and advisory businesses, our wealth and investment business, and our asset management business, we have some specialist activities, which would be aircraft finance, asset finance, project finance, resource finance, private equity, and our property activities. And that gives us the entrepreneurial capability because we are either highly specialized or very, very client-driven. We're not all things to all people. We never want to be all things to all people. And at the end of the day, we want to deliver appropriate returns to our shareholders. We also want to build very strong relationships with our core client base so that we can offer them not just one product but a broad spectrum of services. So where we believe we are is we're building Investec into a high-quality, client-driven organization that is relevant in its core markets. It's no good being in a place where you're not relevant. We have navigated very troubled waters that have reminded us about who we are and what we stand for as a firm. Our focus over the next year will be to execute on our strategic initiatives. So we've already done the one thing, which is Australia. And so that going forward, we'll be recognized as an agile, innovative, service-driven organization, providing great products and services to our clients, above average returns to our shareholders, and a significant contributor to growth and development of both our people, our communities, and broader society. So we believe we have an important role to play as a firm. I think if we get to outlook, you have economic conditions in the developed world have continued to improve, particularly where we operate. The UK economy has gained a lot of momentum, and that is evidenced in the increased levels of activity that we're starting to experience on the ground. I think it goes without saying that the South African economy has gone through a period of weakness. Obviously, we've had a lot of noise on the labor front. We've had elections. We're hopeful that we'll have a cabinet that can help us implement the NDP so that the economy can really start moving forward. But for our type of client base, we are still seeing encouraging levels of activity. And remember, we're not in the consumer space, so we are in the upper end of the market where you have had very good equity markets, you've had decent asset prices, and, you know, there has been opportunity for entrepreneurial endeavor. So our clients seem to have fared quite well in the last year, but overall the economy is limping. I think the significant restructuring effort that has taken over the past year, together with the ongoing strategic initiatives, I think should enable us to benefit from any continued upturn in global conditions and start showing the kind of returns that our shareholders expect of us. So that's our story. A lot of work has been gone into reshaping our firm. A lot of people have made considerable effort around the world. Our people have really stood up to the challenge, so I thank them all for what they've done and the efforts that they've all made. I don't want to single any individuals out. I think it's been a big team effort. And I really think that we're in a much better space than we've been for a long time. So I thank you all for attending, and I'm available for questions. I'll start in Joburg. Ruby, I said no questions from you today.
What can I do, Mr. Kossoff? Mr. Kossoff, I want you to refer to the fixed costs featured on page 8. I'll start with the specialist bank. We're informed that the headcount is down 144 people.
Yeah.
Yet
sure.
For all that, the cost-to-income ratio has gone up.
Yeah.
Now, why is that?
I think there'll be a number of reasons. I think firstly, obviously, the revenue, and you're looking in sterling, so there is an impact that if it was in neutral currency, the cost income ratio would be over 1%. I'm not sure for the specialist bank, for the group about 1% lower. Specialist bank probably 1.5 to 2% lower. We had inflationary adjustments in our fixed costs. As some businesses do better, there would be an increase in variable costs. And we have the costs of reshaping. We're still paying the people that have to be retrenched. You're paying cost for retrenchment. You're doing all sorts of things in there that, you know, would cause a lot of noise in the income statement. So until we finish reshaping, you're going to have this kind of noise. But, yes, we have to get that cost-to-income ratio down. But if you look, where we didn't have a lot of noise was in South Africa. The cost-to-income ratio came down from, I think, 54% to 52%.
Right, let's have a look at the other two divisions, wealth and investment, in the center, first of all.
Yeah.
Headcount is up 51 persons, and as expected, operating costs are up 11.9, and pleasingly, operating income is 15.7. So happy with that division. But let's bear that in mind and look at the asset management. Headcount is up 200 people.
Yeah.
Operating costs are only up 1.3.
Yeah,
but disappointingly, operating income is only up 1.7.
Sure.
In other words, the effect of the additional 200 people hasn't yet been shown in the operating income increase.
Yeah, I think you're looking at it a little bit wrong, because a lot of those 200 people are in a admin unit called Silica, which provides admin services to most of the South African unit trusts and investment firms. And they have a lot of people because it's an admin-intensive business, so that's where a lot of that headcount would be coming from. Some of the headcount is hiring professionals to help us grow and develop, but a lot of that headcount would come from that admin infrastructure.
Am I correct? The Silica department is the one that pays out commissions.
I don't know if it pays out commissions. It's the one that administers unit trusts.
Okay, all right.
So they take in on a lot of new clients in South Africa because they seem to be the flagship administrator of unit trusts.
All right. Just finally, those additional 200 people, are they going to have a positive effect in the year to come on operating income?
Well, it's an admin business, so you don't get a lot of margin on that kind of stuff.
Okay.
It helps us keep our admin costs low because we share resources with other third parties.
Thank you, Mr. Kossoff.
So I wouldn't bet on that. Yeah, Mr. Levy, you brave to talk today.
You're right. Congratulations. Well done. You were right. I was wrong. If I could just ask you to flick to slide 23, a very useful slide. Thank you very much for the detail. The question I have relates to the cost-to-income ratio in the legacy, 126.2. What happens to that if you get Kensington away?
Yeah, I can't, obviously it's going to, this number will be totally different once Kensington is gone. Kensington, there's one profitable element to Kensington, one unprofitable element. We'll have to come back to you on that number. I haven't got it in mind.
Okay, thank you. Then just column to the left, the ongoing 70.1% cost to income.
Yeah.
You've mentioned you've had some revenue pressures there. Where do you see that as a target, medium term, and what's the sort of strategic path to getting there?
Yeah, look, we hope in time we can get it into the low 60s. But because we're not highly leveraged, and some of our stuff is service-driven, that includes the investment banking type, advisory, securities type businesses, probably mid-60s where we can get it to. If you strip that out and just had a pure banking business, then it would be lower. But it's a lot of services and advisory type stuff, which in that part of the world have much higher cost-to-income ratios.
Thank you.
More questions here? Okay, can we go to London? Dave? Is anyone going to ask questions?
Any questions, yeah?
Where's Arun?
Yeah, one question, yeah? Morning, Stephen. A couple of questions. I had one on asset and wealth management. Given all the investments you're making, what is your expectation of net flows as a percentage of AUM? In terms of guidance, would you be able to give some guidance there? It's largely been sort of 3 to 4% in the past.
We target at 5. Asset management will depend on the season. There's years they've done 16, and this year they were 4%. So just depends on the direction of markets and where people are investing.
Be happy with.
As much as possible. Now we'd like it above 5, but as it gets bigger, it's harder to get the numbers bigger.
I was wondering what...
Yeah? I'm listening to you. You've gone on the blink.
Right. The second question was on South African impairments. I was wondering what your guidance was on the 50 bips for the group. How much of it have you baked in? Have you baked in any rises for impairments as the rate rises or whether the economy deteriorates further?
I'm saying normal for us is that South Africa was at 41 or 40 basis points. With the type of clients we deal with, it's only every now and again we get hit by a lump that can push that number out. It should be between 0.3, 0.4 for the type of clients we deal with. Obviously, some of the stuff that caught us in the crisis we don't do anymore. If you had sharp rate rises, well, I suppose that number could go up. Where we are at the moment, we think that number is sustainable. Our net defaults as a percentage of our core cap is only 9%.
Thank you. The last from one a peak I had was in 20. Legacy assets. You have still not given us the asset yield and behavioral maturity to be able to work out whether your trajectory is right or wrong or how much of it you're able to achieve going forward. Would you be able to disclose something on that? Or if not, would you be able to talk a little bit about where you think the marks might be? Were you to undertake some kind of, opportunistic kind of sale in certain elements of that business? I'm talking about UK legacy business ex Kensington. Thank you.
Yeah, I think the UK legacy business ex Kensington is well provisioned. It's something that we're just going to take time to manage out. So there's always one or two binary outcomes where you could get all your money back or lose your money, but I don't think those numbers are big. So, we give you details in the book on the actual gross and the level of impairments against that book. It's got high high level of impairments against that book. So, you know, obviously there's cost to manage this out, which you incur as you go along. And, you know, you have a weaker negative margin. Although with cost of money coming down, you know, maybe that will improve slightly. But, you know, I can't give you the details, Danny. You'll have to have ask Ursula offline for what you're not getting. But I think you get a lot of detail.
No, I'm just, all I wanted was the asset yield. If you could get that, that would be great. Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions here? No more questions from here, Stephen.
Okay, well, then that's it, and thank you for all attending. And there are refreshments for anyone who's thirsty or hungry. So thank you. Cheers. Anyone want to ask specific questions offline? You're welcome.